This is the Pitch Vision Academy show number 82. This is the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sappas from Australia. David, did you manage to get a win under your belt this week, or was it just a suntanning session for you guys again?
Yes, well, it was a bit of both. We did manage to win, which is great news after the loss last week, the very disappointing loss last week. But it was a comprehensive victory this week in beautiful sunshine all over the UK, and especially over where we were. We played against a weaker team in the league.
Yeah.
I lost the toss again, so I've lost three tosses out of four now. So I'm obviously not very good at that. They decided to bat, which was a bit of a surprise because they were very weak. And as it turned out, they were very weak. We bowled them out for 104 in 40, exactly 40 overs. So they batted very slowly. One of their openers decided to just stick around, basically. And he batted most of the innings for 43. But he was the only one who got any runs. And our leg spinner was back in the side, and he took 5 for 33, so he had a very good day.
Nice.
We had a player in from the first team who unfortunately was dropped for no fault of his own. It wasn't because of bad form or anything, it's just that there was a tactical change. And he opened the batting and hit a very confident 50. And we won the game in no time at all, 2 wickets down in just over 22 overs.
Oh, wow. So, it really is comprehensive.
So you can't really do better than that.
Yeah. Well, I think it was an important win for you guys, David, because quite often you see teams coming back from a loss against one of the top teams, and they just all have their heads down and they start losing games they should win against teams like the opposition you described that are really at the bottom of the table. And because their confidence is so low, they don't perform. It happened to us as well last year. So I think this is an important game for you guys and probably give a lot of your players a lot of confidence.
Well, we would have been they were very poor, so we would have done well to lose that game. But to be fair, we have been losing games against much weaker opposition. So we've lost two. We lost one against quite strong opposition, but they were weakened. So we should have won that one really, and we lost one against very weak opposition. Purely because we had a batting collapse. So to go out and really stuff someone is very satisfying. We had the strongest side we'd had all season. In fact, we were so strong that, and we knew they were going to be weak, that we put our star bowler in the third 11 because he wasn't feeling 100% fit. He wanted to play, but he wasn't feeling 100% fit. So we said to him, well, why don't you play in the third 11? You can have a bat. You don't have to bowl at full pace in a lower level, and he was quite happy to do so. If we hadn't dropped him, we'd have had 8 bowlers.
That's a lot.
Yeah, we'd have had eight, and I'm not talking about four bowlers and 4 part timers. I'm talking about 8, certainly 7 bowlers who could bowl anywhere. Who could open the bowling or be a decent spinner. And then one who can easily give you, 5 to 10 overs in the middle somewhere without causing you major problems. So extremely strong, and we batted all the way down as well. So, I was due to go in about number 9, and I've been batting 4 earlier in the season. So I think that shows the difference in the batting strength as well. The fact I can go from number 4 to number 9 and still feel confident in everybody above me. What about you, Kevin? I mean, it's your off season, isn't it? What have you been up to?
Yeah, that's right, David. I've sort of given the cricket a break. I mean, you can get burned out from a lot of cricket over your actual cricket season. So I thought I'd go and give another sport a go. And there's a good, there's a famous sport here called Australian rules football. Basically, it involves a lot of running, kicking a rugby-shaped footy. And, David, it's just dramatically improved my fitness. And I think going into the season, my cricket season coming up, I think it'll be the fittest I've ever been going into a cricket season. So, yeah, the results have been good so far. I'm enjoying what I'm playing, and I'm glad I'm actually not playing any sort of cricket, because when the actual cricket season or the sort of the off season comes just before the cricket season, I can sort of get into my training and start getting that hunger and passion again. Because I think often players who've had a long, hard cricket season, especially like we've done, they go and play more cricket over the winter, like I was pondering on doing, and then they just get sick of it at the end, that they have no passion or drive to sort of really get their fitness or their skill level up. So, yeah, I'm liking how things are turning out. And the club I actually played for, I'm playing for in Aussie Rules, Mark Taylor used to play for our club. So there's a little cricketing aspect coming to that. And he actually attended one of our games a couple of weeks back. So,
Ah.
yeah, it's been really good to sort of be involved in a new sport. And it adds a lot of new things that you don't otherwise get in cricket. Like my lower body strength is really weak. I mean, I know I should go to the gym and try and improve it, but just playing cricket doesn't improve your lower body strength as much as what the demands Australian rules football sort of gives, which is basically running for 80 minutes, sprinting and starting. So, yeah, I'm just looking forward to the cricket season coming up, David.
So playing a different sport then kind of refreshes you. It takes your mind off the cricket and makes you think, use your body in other ways and use your mind in other ways, and sort of freshens everything up. Is that right?
Yeah, it does, David. I don't know. I think some famous trainer mentioned this, but they said if you keep doing the same sort of exercise repetitively, your body gets used to it and doesn't react to that as much. So I think really doing something else sort of shocks your body into developing more strength or finding different ways to do things. So I think that's sort of going to transfer on to my cricket, because I think my core strength has naturally improved because of the kind of sport I'm playing. Whereas if I was in cricket, I wouldn't get this kind of core strength that I'm getting from these different sports. So, yeah, I think not only physically, but mentally as well, it sort of gets your mind off cricket and, yeah, it revitalizes you.
It definitely works because they did some research into sort of younger kids, and they found the ones who did the best in a single sport were the ones who played more than one sport when they were younger, and that's because they're learning how to move in different ways all the time, and different ways of thinking, and it doesn't get boring, and they don't get injuries because they're just moving in one way all the time. So it definitely does make a difference.
Yeah, I agree with that, David. And you see a lot of the sports stars as well. I mean, Andrew Simons is one that immediately springs to mind. He played rugby league. He was really big in rugby league, and he had the opportunity to go to rugby league or stay with cricket as well. Same with Ricky Ponting. He actually got a offer to play AFL, which is the sport I'm playing, for a professional club, but he knocked that back and played cricket. So it just shows that even the international stars, they have a lot of other things to back on that actually brought them to where they are now. So it's interesting to think, and maybe the kids out there who are sort of centered on cricket, it could be worthwhile to sort of pick up another sport in the off season to get them ahead of the others.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Next up on the show, we have a sneak preview for you. I recently caught up with former Glamorgan player and coach Adrian Shaw. Adrian's created a brand new course on Pitch Vision Academy called The Game Plan, and part of the course is a 40-minute interview discussing tactics and plans for club and schools cricket. We thought we'd give you a taster with a few minutes of that interview. For the full course, visit www.pitchvision.com/academy.
I'm sat in the changing rooms at Neath Cricket Club talking to Adrian Shaw, who's the man behind the game plan. Adrian, can we start by talking about, for those who aren't in the know, a little bit about your experience in cricket?
Yeah, well, I was fortunate enough to play for Glamorgan for 20 years. I had about 12 years as a player, and then I moved into coaching at the age of 32. So I've got a reasonably wide experience of cricket across the spectrum, really. And I've sort of been through the various phases of cricket, if you like, and periods where I've struggled, and periods where I've had more success. So I like to think I've got a pretty balanced outlook on what's needed to succeed in cricket.
And you've played plenty of club cricket, plenty of professional cricket. What would you say the difference is between the first class level and the club level?
I think the obvious thing is the difference of pace. And I think that probably cuts across all sport. And ultimately in cricket, if you have got that extra pace as a bowler, you're funneled into first class game quickly. And also then the batters are used to facing that pace. So I think it is an element of pace and obviously movement of the ball in terms of prodigious spin. And it's a technical game, and you do tend to find that the first class cricketers are technically obviously more proficient by definition. But you know, there's a lot of very, very good club cricketers around who, given the opportunity, could have played first class cricket, no doubt.
And does that change the way that you approach the tactics and the captaincy of the game between the two levels?
Subtly, I think it does, because I think you can't expect club cricketers to have the same practice routines and to commit the same hours to practice as professionals do. By definition, a professional can do it 6, 7, 8 hours a day if he wants and work on his technique, whereas a player, we've got wives and families and jobs, and we may only have 1 or 2 evenings a week where we can work. So yeah, there are differences, but in terms of the mental approach to the game, I think it's basically the same sport when you cross the white line, and there are a lot of similarities.
Does it make much difference to the way that you select a team?
I think ultimately in cricket, you look to pick your best 11 to win the game of cricket, no matter what level it is, be it third 11 club cricket up to Test match 11, and ultimately, you know, you still want to get a balanced team whenever you can, whenever possible. You know, you want your best batters and you want your best bowlers, and that may sound like it's stating the obvious, but the modern trend is toward bits and pieces cricketers and all rounders, but success is generally dictated by having your bowlers who take the wickets and your top six scoring the runs. So I think there's a basic formula that cuts across all levels of the sport, really.
What is that formula? How would you put that?
Well, I think you've got to have a right balance of players within your team, both technically as players and as individuals as well. And you need the right kind of characters. You need the people who give the energy to the team. You need the people who, the quiet achievers, if you like. You need the solid people. And you need the kind of people in the team who will just keep going all the time, and sort of the cheerleaders of the team. And technically as well, you do need people who bring different things to the party. So you always need the person who likes to slog it for 20 or 30 quickly. And you need someone who's prepared to bat for 30 or 40 overs for not too many either. And they're both invaluable in their own way.
Let's talk a bit about something which I know you're quite keen to bring more into club cricket, and that's roles. Can you tell me a little bit more about roles and how they work in club cricket?
Well, my experience in sport tells me that one of the key aspects of success in a team environment is the awareness of roles. Not just your own role, but everyone else's role and their awareness of your role. And once you get this role clarity where everyone knows what everyone else is doing, it becomes a lot easier to achieve success. It's very difficult to actually get a successful winning environment if you don't know what the person batting with you is looking to attain or the person bowling with you is looking to attain. So you do need these roles to be clear, and it's not defined by ability level as well. That's the beauty of this. It's something you can do from third or fourth 11 club cricket right through the sort of scale of cricket and ability. So it's a really, really vital thing for me, and I think it's an area that probably isn't looked at enough in the amateur ranks of sport.
The cynical person or the old-fashioned person might say that the only roles that you need to worry about is that the batsmen score runs and the bowlers take wickets. Is it more complicated than that?
I think probably it's not more complicated than that. It's more about how you go about scoring your runs and how you go about taking your wickets. You know, to give an example, if you've got a batsman whose method of scoring runs is to occupy the crease, you need the players who bat with him to be aware of his method of scoring runs. Similarly, if you've got someone who likes to strike the ball, you know, he needs a little bit of leeway. That is the way he's effective. And ultimately, the proof of the pudding is in eating. And if you get success and you score runs, by whatever means possible, people need to be aware of that. And it's exactly the same with bowling. You know, may have a strike bowler who could possibly go for runs now and again, but is a match winner on his day. Similarly, the bowler who only ever takes two or three wickets but never goes so many runs takes wickets the other end. And it's important that we can identify these roles within the team.
How difficult is it to establish those roles and get everybody to buy into not only their own roles that have been set out, but the roles that everyone else has in the team?
Well, I think like anything, it's about good communication. Obviously, you don't have the time to talk in club cricket and spend planning for games very often because of logistical reasons. Relatively difficult, but not as difficult as you may think. These things can be done over a pint in the bar, you know, after a net session, having a nice chat outside in the summer's evening. They can be done in any situation, really. And it really is something that it doesn't cost anything. You're not actually looking to change the makeup of your squad. You're just looking to improve what you've actually got within your team. So I think it's something that can be done. And you just need that little bit of extra thought, a little bit of extra planning as to when you can actually do it. But there's always time out there because you're not talking about a lot. You're just talking about maybe 20 minutes, you know, getting a squad together, identifying the roles, and then you can identify the roles and spread that onto the rest of the squad so everyone's aware of who's doing what.
Sometimes it doesn't go according to plan. How do you deal with a situation where you've given somebody a role and they're not filling it as you would have hoped they would?
This is the vital importance to the whole thing of roles. If someone's not fulfilling their role, then you've got a problem, because obviously that's their definition. But there's a subtle difference between not fulfilling a role and having an off day. Every player has off days, from Kevin Peterson down to, you know, someone who plays for Neath 3011. And that's to be accepted and to be understood, because nobody can succeed all the time. The dangerous thing, and something we need to monitor as captains and coaches, is someone who starts to try and go outside of what their prescribed role is. So if you've got someone who, by definition, likes to occupy the crease and doesn't strike the ball particularly cleanly, if for some reason he starts getting caught mid-often and go over the top, there's a clear communication breakdown there. If you've got a wily old medium pacer who doesn't go for many runs and he suddenly starts trying to bowl the speed of light and spraying it everywhere, that again is a communication problem. So these things need to be ironed out. If someone's trying to fulfil their role and having a bad day, that's part of sport and should be embraced, really. If, you know, if we don't have bad days, it'll be a boring sport, wouldn't it?
And how long do you go with someone who maybe could fill one of several roles and you think you set him along a path of one role and it's not going very well? How long do you go down that path before maybe you change direction?
I don't think there's a black and white answer to that. Ultimately, sport is about evolving. You know, as cricketers, we all evolve. And when you start out playing cricket at 12 or 13 or 10 or 14, whatever it is, as to when you get into first 11 club cricket at maybe 16, 17, you're a very different player from when you finish at 40 or whatever time it is you finish. And you evolve along the way. And the important thing, again, is the communication. Because as players evolve, the changes need to be communicated between the players and between the coach and between the captain. And the leadership group plays a massive part here, because these changes need to be aired and they need to be apparent so the captain can deal with them and the coach can deal with them. And there's no confusion as to the direction the team is going in.
Another problem that club teams face is the changing nature of sides. You know, players are unavailable from week to week. Not everybody can play every week. How do you manage to stay consistent with results with a team that can't necessarily have consistency in selection?
Again, logistical problems that, you know, you're going to get because people work. They work shifts. They've got domestic issues. You know, whatever it may be. There's two ways you can go, really. When someone drops out of a team, you can either look to replace that person with a like for like. So if you've got someone who maybe bats at six and is a striker of the ball, you could look to directly replace him with a number six from the second team. Or you can change the dynamic of your team, which may be bringing in maybe a top order bat and shifting the order around. Historically, it's easier to have a like-for-like experience, like-for-like replacement, because that means you haven't got to move other batters around within the team. But that may not be an option. But the important thing is, you know, all cricket teams have the leadership, the captains, the coaches, the senior players, who have got the nous to know where someone fits into the team. And it's important, as you say, you cheer over that little group of leadership and your senior players, captains, coaches, and you just work out what particular group of players you've got for that week and how they fit into it. Don't just throw people in willy-nilly without a thought to where's the best place for him to bat. When's the best time for him to come on to bowl? You know, do we need to protect this young bowler? Does he need to bowl? Maybe he shouldn't bowl this week because he's young and it's a very delicate situation. So, you know, as in anything in sport, you're relying on senior players and your experienced players to make good judgment calls on managing your options, really.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because that's another thing that I know that you advocate, is the senior or the player management group, which you don't really see in club cricket again. So tell us a little bit about the idea behind that.
Well, it's something I actually picked up from Duncan Fletcher, who I was fortunate enough to play under when he was at Glamorgan. And he brought in, I don't think it had ever been seen in English cricket, not to my knowledge, not formally anyway, but he advocated a management group. And the subtle difference of it was it wasn't just consisting of senior players. It was a cross-section of the players in the team. So there was about four or five players in. So there were quite a reasonably large percentage of the team. But there were a couple of young players in. There was a senior player. There was a sort of quiet player. And he tried to get a broad cross-section. And the reason for that was he felt it was an excellent filter to get the feelings and the thoughts of the whole team. And obviously, if you only had senior players, you are going to risk of the younger players not being heard. And it also became a very good tool for incorporating maybe players who at times could be quite difficult. Players who are difficult to manage, possibly discipline issues. And I saw with my own eyes very good examples of players who had various discipline issues really flowering through being part of a management structure, because that extra responsibility made them actually think a bit more, made them analyse their own behaviour more, and it basically empowers people. And there's no reason why that wouldn't work in club cricket. Absolutely not at all. If you had, you know, one senior player, a middle of the road player, maybe in his mid-20s, a young player, and you could just discuss certain things after night, and again, maybe over beer in the bar or outside in the field. You know, it's not a formal meeting when you're sitting down taking minutes. It's just a chat, and a young player can maybe say, well, listen, you've got a slight problem with young David because of this, and it gets back, and then the senior player can throw his bit in. So everybody's feels like they're empowered, and you're getting a good cross-section of the thoughts from within the team and the mindset of where the team is and maybe what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong. And it's a really good base for movement forward and progression, really.
There'll be people listening to this, captains perhaps of club teams, who are saying these ideas sound good, but the problem I've got with my team is there's a certain apathy around the side. And by that I mean players want to turn up, play their game of cricket, have a nice tea, have a drink afterwards and go home. They're not particularly interested in development and things like that. So if you're keen to improve, but perhaps the ambition of the club is not quite the same, how do you manage that?
With a great deal of difficulty, to be honest. So, I mean, if you have got a situation where there's a different outlook, a different viewpoint on possibly the direction the club wants to go in terms of ambition, it's something that does need to be managed, because it can become very stressful if one person wants to push the team on and he feels he's being held back by people who are just there to get away from the wife for 5 hours on a Saturday afternoon. And I think ultimately you need a core of people within the team who are ambitious. And ambition is not directly linked to age. I've played with 40-year-olds who are highly ambitious, and I've played with 18-year-olds who have got no ambition at all. So there's no link between ambition and age. And I think ultimately if you're looking to put a team together, you need a core of people around you with that drive to actually kick the team on, if you like. You can get away with two or three people who aren't particularly ambitious, but the vast majority need to be pulling in the same direction. You can just about carry two or three. If there's more than two or three, it can become a problem.
And you can also get more information, tips, advice and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. And you can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show for free on iTunes. Or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 4th of June. So if you want to give yourself a chance to enter the Pitch Vision Academy competition, or you want to get in touch with us, or you have any other questions, you can email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So this is Kevin Sampath from Sydney, Australia, signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.